Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, guys, Sunday night, 9 o'clock. I know Chris Canty is going to be glued, and we all will be glued to ESPN television. 9 o'clock, it all comes to an end. The final two episodes of The Last Dance on ESPN TV, the closing of a chapter in NBA history. Missed any of the first 8 episodes? You can binge it all day Sunday beginning at 1 o'clock and go episode 1 all the way through 10 on ESPN television or on ESPN Plus. And Rick, you're gonna stay up all the way to 11 o'clock on Sunday night, aren't you?
No, I'm gonna do my best. Here's the dumb question, though. I mean, when you see how much people look forward to watching this on Sunday nights and realize it's the last two episodes, couldn't we have maybe just made it, you know, an episode this Sunday and another episode next Sunday?
Stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we got nothing, man. I mean, I look forward to Sundays. Just give me this 1 hour, and then I'll wait for give me some reason to look forward to next Sunday to get the last hour.
Yeah, you could. But, I mean, the entire way they've gone 2-2-2-2-2.
Well, maybe you started off 2-2-2, and then you realize, okay, I mean, the number we're getting at 9 for that first hour is higher than the number we're getting at 10. People love this. People want it. There's nothing going on. Let's just go now. Let's, for the last two or the last four episodes, let's spread it out. An hour each sitting. And that way I can be asleep by 10:15 instead of 11:15.
Right. So it's all about you.
Partially, yeah, it's all about me.
Now, the public is clamoring for this. Clamoring.
Yeah, but you'll be upset when it's done.
Of course, because it's actually something to do, to look forward to enjoy now.
I went back and watched the last couple episodes. And that Scottie Pippen decision still makes no sense to me at all.
Well, it's never going to make sense to you.
And by the way, underrated pass, too. I mean, the inbounds was
for
a terrific
Pete Myers,
pass.
Right?
Terrific pass.
Yeah.
I mean, he put that in the perfect spot. And then, I mean, they end up making the shot. You know what aggravated me that day, though? Because you mentioned it. Would Scottie Pippen have played in the overtime? And we had the Twitter trolls come out where they think they're right and they try to correct you. Mm-hmm. No, the Knicks had a point lead. If he misses that shot, there's no over. The game was tied. Stop, please.
No, the game was tied.
I know. I get it. I realize that.
I wonder if he would have, though.
Or if Phil Jackson would have let him. At that point,
that was so awful.
Phil Jackson
the thing that bothers me to no end is that he's like to make a bad decision. And it's such almost like a petulant child. To make a bad decision is one thing. What are we now? We're 25 years later to come out and say, nope, I do the same exact thing all over again is mind boggling, isn't it?
It's hard to get a proud man to admit that he did something wrong, Dave. It's hard to do. Clearly, he was wrong.
But
the reaction that he got from his teammates is all you need to know. That was going to be something that they forgive him for, but they're never going to forget that. In that moment where they needed you, you decided that you were going to tap out. That's never going to play well.
Yeah, but exactly to Dave's point. I mean, you got a chance to live that, see what it did for you, I mean, in that moment.
And you doubled down.
And you doubled down. Man, that's just asinine. If you could go back and make a different decision, having lived through the repercussions of the decision, and they're not great repercussions, of course you change it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It would have been, listen, now, you're probably not going to ever give him the benefit of the doubt because, I mean, what he did was indefensible, but he would have done himself a huge solid had he said, of course I would have went back and changed it if I could.
Yeah, you'd feel differently now. You feel like, all right, in the heat of the moment, guy made a horrendous decision, lived with it all these years, in retrospect, looks back on it and says, it was a stupid thing I did, and I should have done it differently. But he won't do that.
But what lessens the blow is the fact that Tony Kukoc did make the shot. They didn't get swept by the Knicks. And oh, by the way, Michael Jordan came back the next year. So everybody kind of forgets about it. But it was a bad look. It was clearly a selfish decision, and there's no way that you could defend it, not back then and not even now. So he's come off looking bad in this documentary. I mean, no matter how you felt about Scottie Pippen coming into this thing, the way that he looks and your opinion of him afterward, you know, it's taken a little bit of the shine off of Pip.
Yeah, I just don't know how in the same breath you say you know it was wrong, but then you wouldn't change it. Doesn't make much sense.
It doesn't. All right, 800-919-3776. We'll hear from Rob Manfred in a couple of minutes. Let's get to the calls. People want to talk about this unbelievable Giants story, and let's continue along. Pedro in Newark. Pedro, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, folks, how you doing? Just wanted to call in about the Dave Gettleman. It seems like he's in a hot seat. He took a gamble and a high risk by selecting DeAndre Baker.
Well, I think he was on the hot seat even prior to this story. I mean, not even think. The owner had said it's a hot seat. He's got to prove himself. This is an important season, right? And then to have this happen on top of it makes it turned up that much more.
Yeah, you're talking about the first-round draft pick that you traded three picks to get back in the first round to get. You gave up all of that draft capital. You made this kind of investment, a $5 million signing bonus, a $10 million contract, and this is how the player decides to repay you. In an offseason where he's not participating in the virtual meetings, he decides that he's going to go out there and do something like this. It's a terrible look, man. I mean, there's no way around it. This is going to reflect poorly on Dave Gettleman's resume, and in an offseason where he's already been put on notice, this is the last thing that he needed. You know, and now I'm sitting here looking at Twitter, and Amy Dash, who's the legal analyst for Fox and CBS, she says that if Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker was in fact holding a semi-automatic, as the witnesses say, he would face 15-year mandatory minimums on each of the four armed robbery charges if convicted, unless he gets a deal. The aggravated assault charges is up to the judge, but Dave, 15-year mandatory minimums for each armed robbery charge.
Yeah. I mean, so unless there's some kind of a crazy deal, forget about his NFL career. I mean, his freedom is going to be taken away for a long time. A long time.
Yeah, he's going to be locked up and they ain't going to let him out.
No, for a long time. And for what?
For nonsense, Dave. For nonsense.
If you're the Giants, though, I mean, and you've spoken to DeAndre Baker, and you've heard his side of the story, I can't imagine that, I mean, maybe there are a couple, you know, different things in his story than's being reported.
I'm sure there are.
Okay, but like Chris just mentioned, like if you went there and you had a gun and you committed this robbery, I don't care whose idea it was, if it was your idea or if it was Quentin, whoever's idea it was, you were part of this, is why would you wait? Like if you're the Giants and you're so, I mean, you're hell-bent on changing the culture and everything else, just, I mean, cut ties now. What are you waiting for? He's not a great player anyway. Yeah, you gave up draft capital, but I mean, he was a problem last year. Clearly, I mean, he's not a smart guy. He didn't learn his lesson. And now he's dealing with this. I think you need to be proactive.
And do it before he even turns himself in?
You can wait if you want for him to turn himself in. I mean, wouldn't that be the first piece of advice if you already talked to him? Hey, DeAndre, let's not make this worse. Just go turn yourself in.
You would think so. And they spoke to him yesterday. And as of 10 o'clock this morning, he still hadn't turned himself in?
Yeah, what are you waiting on if you're DeAndre Baker?
I don't know.
Like, what you're being accused of is not going to change. The arrest warrant is not going to go away. Turn yourself in. Tell your side of the story, and then you have to go through the legal process.
Well, he's watching Shawshank Redemption to figure out how to escape once he gets locked up.
Big okay, good luck
Big
with
poster.
That.
Yeah. Ali in New Jersey. Ali here on 98.7.
How are you, gentlemen? It's a sad situation with the DeAndre Baker, you know, debacle. But here's the thing. Let's just take the money off the table. This guy's got a $10 million contract. He's guaranteed five. He goes to a card game. He's got $70,000. First question is, who goes to a card game with $70,000? And
professional athletes, because they have that kind of money.
Yeah, and they do. But here's the dummy. Here's the dumbness in that. If you have $70,000, you can afford to lose that. But let me tell you what his thinking was, because he did have a choice. Oh, I'm at a card game. I get taken for $70,000. I feel bad about it. Now, the people that he was playing cards with, I don't know who they are. But the point is that in social media, they're going to say, guess what? We were playing a card game, and I took $70,000 off a professional NFL athlete. His name is DeAndre Baker. Now he has to live with that in the social media. Now he's looking at it like, oh, they're pimping me. They're punking me. I look soft out here.
Ali, you're 50, Steph. I mean, come on. You don't know that these things are true.
I don't know that it's true.
How can you make these assumptions that these guys are going on social media, you know, punking
Well, because he's trying to make
$70,000.
Because he's trying to make sense out of it.
Right. Right, but here's the thing. If I was sitting at a card game with a professional athlete and I won, I'm telling someone. It's almost like a code of like, you know, I beat this guy. I'll never go to the NFL, but guess what? I took $70,000 off of him. Now he's thinking, oh, okay, they want to play that game. I'm gonna come back, get my money, stick out a gun, rob everybody. That is the dumbest thing he could have did. He had a choice. But that's what I'm thinking that he's thinking. That's it. Plain and simple. And what about the other athletes that don't ever get a chance to ever even sniff a stadium that have the talent and have the, you know, academics or whatever you want to call it to want to play in the NFL and never get a shot? Never get a shot. That's the sad thing. Third thing, and I'll leave it here, is that there are many people out here that don't have jobs. Okay, they're looking for their next meal, and then you've got a gentleman like this that has most of the money in the world and goes out and commits a crime or a situation like this, allegedly. It's stupid. It's mind-boggling. And guess
what? It's mind-blowing, Ali.
It's going to happen again today. It's probably happening now. There's a card game somewhere that somebody's blowing goo gobs of money, and they don't care about it, but they're not going to come back and rob this.
But what they do, hold on, what they do with their money is their business. They earn that.
That's true.
So that's their business. So you can't judge them based on that. Now, the decision to come back and try to rob the people that took the money in the gambling, that's the issue at hand, and that's why there's an arrest warrant issued for DeAndre Baker. What he does with his money is his business.
That's true. I agree with that.
So you can't. I mean, you can try to judge it, but that's not a crime. The crime was when he decided to get a handgun, and
or worse, Look, we're watching it. We're watching a documentary every Sunday night about a guy who gambled his face off. Fine, it's your money. Do what you want to do with it. But when you allegedly take it to the next level, is when you've gone way too far, and he's going to pay for it potentially.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways.
I mean, you're trying to make sense out of nonsense. Doesn't make any sense.
No. It never will. This will never. We could sit here 5 years from now, and if all this is true and he gets convicted and he does jail time, you will never be able to convince me or Chris or Rick that this makes any iota of sense.
But he shouldn't have been there in the first place, Dave. He shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't be in that environment. We got a pandemic going on, and you want to go party and gamble? With people that are not your family, that's the part of it that doesn't make any sense. Right now, everybody's taking precautions to try to stay as safe as possible. And this is what you decide to do in your downtime. You can't find time to be a part of the virtual meetings with your team, but you can find time to go to not one but two parties and commit aggravated assault and armed robbery.
That's right. That's exactly right. Mark and Clifton, you're next up on 98.7, Mark.
Yeah, hey, how are you guys? I love the show. I just had two questions for you, if you had time, real quick. Firstly, although this situation really is a disaster for the Giants, I just wanted some perspective maybe from Chris into an athlete's mind. I mean, this guy was about to make nearly $10 million, right? Everybody knows it literally takes thousands of hours and effort and all that, you know, to even get to the situation that he got to. For someone to go ahead and do such an absolutely crazy thing, does that mean that this guy has an actual mental issue, or do athletes in general just get into their head that they can do whatever they want and then they just become reckless because, you know, they have the fame and everything? I mean, does this guy actually have a real issue? I mean, how could he go ahead and do such a crazy thing?
Well, clearly he's not wrapped tight. I don't know if he has any mental illness. I'm not going to assign that to him just because he does something that's irrational. Well, I mean, this is not the first time we've heard about a professional athlete getting in trouble with the law because of gun violence.
Yeah, but I don't even know. Can you consider it irrational? Like, this wasn't like you lost the 70 grand, were upset, and then you went back to your place and then showed back up to get your money back.
But you had time to sleep
on
this.
It's irrational because you don't think of what happens after you get the money back and you leave. That's the part that makes it irrational.
But this seems to me just a little more than irrational. This is absolutely crazy. He's pretty much giving up on everything that he just worked so hard to get.
Yeah, but he doesn't think like that, Mark. That's the thing. There's no way through his mind as he's sitting there allegedly with a weapon stealing money and watches at a party that he's thinking, now if I do this, the rest of my NFL career is in jeopardy. right? There's no way that that's going through his mind.
It can't be going through his mind. It couldn't. No. I mean, that was the furthest thing from his mind. I mean, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go in here. We're going to get, you know, whatever money they have, watches and everything else. We're going to jump in these getaway cars. And no one will be the wise. Like, no one, they won't know it's us. We'll get away with it. I mean, really? Come on. It's ridiculous.
Incredible. It's incredible.
But here's the other thing, though. But Dave, here's the other thing, though, to take into account. And I know we're sitting here, you know, talking about DeAndre Baker making the decision and everything else. But to Chris's point, I mean, in the midst of this pandemic, right, you decide, now, I don't care what state you're in. I mean, this happens in Florida, which is, I mean, they've eased up as far as stay at home and everything else. But the reality with these sports coming back, and I keep saying this, is you can say it's as safe as you want, but you're putting a lot of trust in your teammates and the people around you to also be doing the right things. I mean, and clearly, I mean, if you're on the same team as DeAndre Baker and he's off gallivanting at parties,
right?
I mean, he's putting you in harm's way too.
Well, I mean, there's so many layers to this, right? It's hard in its own right to trust. I mean, forget about athletes or not. It's just hard to trust people now that they're going to do the right thing. Then you take it to the next level of the athlete, and they're going to be, you know, locked away with other teammates. And then you take it to the level of where we are with DeAndre Baker. I mean, there's so many different levels to this story, but you're right. I mean, how are you supposed to trust somebody when there's guys like this that'll go out and just throw caution to the wind and don't care about anybody else's well-being?
It's unfortunate, Dave, that DeAndre Baker put himself in this position. I just wonder, had the Giants organization and the team had better leadership in the locker room, would we be in the same place that we are today? Would he be in the same place that he's in today? Like they started the virtual meetings a few weeks ago. Like the fact that he had not been participating, had I been a veteran in that locker room, I would be on the phone with DeAndre Baker trying to figure out why the hell he's not showing up for meetings. And maybe within that, there might be some getting to the kid and trying to hold him accountable for his actions. Maybe we might be talking about a different situation. Maybe we might not be talking about him trying to rob people with a gun had there been better leadership around him in his rookie season. I don't know. These are all hypotheticals. But I go back to the decision that Dave Gettleman made to bring DeAndre Baker into that locker room, knowing that he had character flags and expecting a different result than what we're getting right now from it.
Well, especially if you don't have the locker room that can handle. You know what I mean? Like, there are some locker rooms that have great leadership, great veteran leadership.
Right.
That players, you know, take charge of the team, that they can absorb, you know, sketchy personalities.
Like you said about the Patriots all the time for all those years.
Exactly right. And because they know they have Tom Brady and they have the leadership in that locker room to deal with it. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, from listening to Jordan, that they tried. I mean, there were occasions where they tried to hold him accountable and make him a better teammate. But it just feels like, Chris, he's one of those guys, and I'm sure you played with guys like this, that you try, and by the end of it, you just quit on them. Like, they're just a lost cause.
Yep.
There's no helping this guy.
Yep.
It's kind of what it feels like.
It does. A lot of stuff going on right now. James Harrison's story we're going to get into in a little bit as well. Of course, DeAndre Baker, kind of the theme of the show. But Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, was on CNN, a little town hall meeting last night. Guys, let's take a little bit of a listen to this on hoping to save the 2020 Major League Baseball season.
I think it's hopeful that we will have some Major League Baseball this summer. We are making plans about playing in empty stadiums. But as I've said before, all of those plans are dependent on what the public health situation is and us reaching the conclusion that it'll be safe for our players and other employees to come back to work.
Well, I mean, we're all hopeful. That's for sure. And it did sound like we're moving in that direction. And if you hear the Kay show, he's the one that says, and Michael says he has sources that say, this is going to all be about the financial ramifications, that they're going to find a way to get all the I's dotted, T's crossed for the other things, and it'll come down to finances to get this thing done.
Finances will be the biggest hurdle.
Yep.
And I can't imagine. I mean, when you start talking about the amount of money that we're talking about in, you know, $4 billion for the owners, which I thought was funny, too, because the owners are always talking about money, but no one has the same kind of reaction as they did to Blake Snell.
Exactly, man. I don't get that.
Well, what I thought was funny, though, so the owners are going to lose $4 billion. So I was looking this morning, and I was talking to Ray Deanahan. Well, how much are the players going to lose if there's no season? Just about $4 billion. And, I mean, are the owners losing, I mean, $4 billion of the $10 billion, the $10.5 billion that they made last year, so they're still making $6.5 billion? Because I think if they were going to lose, you know, if the season was canceled, right, and the total loss was, because they'd have no revenues coming in, was going to be around $14 billion as opposed to $4 billion, wouldn't they have said $14 billion? Why wouldn't they just say $4
billion? 100%. It's 100%. I mean, the owners are saying if we're not making what we're accustomed to making, then we're taking a $4 billion loss, and that's not fair to us. The players should absorb some of that loss. Well, to me, based on the agreement that they made several weeks ago, the players taking prorated salaries for only playing half the season, that's the loss that they're taking. The players aren't going to recoup that money. I don't understand why folks want to put the onus on the players to bear the brunt of the financial implications in this situation, where the billionaire owners are in better position because they have more resources and they have more money. I mean, the owners, here's the thing, man. The owners are passing the L on to the players and the employees, and I just don't feel like that's fair. Nobody's talking about what Buster Olney told us yesterday, the fact that Major League Baseball is expecting massive layoffs because the owners don't want to operate the clubs in the red this year. The owners don't want to have to deal with taking any of the financial hit. And they want to pass that on to all of their employees. How is that the right thing to do in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, but Chris, here's the question, though. I mean, he said $4 billion, right? You know, last year, revenue in Major League Baseball.
Forbes said that baseball is a $10.5 billion business last year.
Exactly right. So yes. He was talking about if the season is canceled, you have, you know, $133 million losses for all these teams. Well, the Yankees made $683 million in 2019. So are they still going to make, I mean, does that mean that the 683, now it's plus the 133, or is it the 133 minus, you know, what they made or what they're accustomed to making?
Rick, you know the answer to that question. You know the answer to that question.
Well, exactly right. But I mean, we're talking about transparency and everything else. Well, then Major League Baseball is not going to give you as the fan transparency. And they usually don't ever give the unions the transparency of what they're actually making.
Yeah, Rob Manfred being on that CNN town hall last night was just more litigation in the court of public opinion. They're just continuing to press and press and press and try to paint the players out to be villains in this situation. Everybody's jumping on it, hook, line, and sinker. Everybody wants to vilify Blake Snell for expressing all the things that the players are talking about behind the scenes. Nobody is focusing on the fact that the players are at the negotiating table with the billionaires who are trying to do the same damn thing, which is to protect their bottom line.
It's never going to happen. I mean, the public is never going to
take the
side of
the player. But why is that never
going to
happen, Dave? Why do we want to criticize the employee and not the employer? Why do we want to jump down the players' throats when the owners are asking the players to take more risk than they usually take for a lot less pay? Yeah, why are we doing that?
Listen, because
the employee is also the product, Chris. And what we want right now is the product. That's why.
Yeah, but we can have the product if the owners just decide to honor the agreement that they came to a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Michael Kay is the one that's always screaming about how players sign a contract. They shouldn't hold out. They should honor that contract. Well, what the hell are the owners supposed to do? Shouldn't they honor the agreement that they came to with the players? I don't get that. I don't get that. It just doesn't make sense to me. It fires me up.
All right, let's continue to listen to Rob
Manfred. Time out, Dave, and it fires the players up. I mean, you heard what Bryce Harper had to say. I mean, listen, Blake Snell, did he say it the right way? Absolutely not. Should he have said it the way that he said it?
No,
he shouldn't have. Whenever you make it about money, you're going to look like the bad guy. But having, you know, heard what Bryce Harper had to say about it.
See, that's the part I also disagree with everybody slightly, Rick. I don't think Blake Snell was making it about money. I think Blake Snell was trying to point out the fact that they're taking on an inordinate amount of risk for a lot less pay. And in that situation where you're taking on the kind of risk that we're talking about associated with the coronavirus, you should be at least talking about making the same thing, if not more money. Usually on jobs, when they ask you to take more risks, they give you more money. It's called hazard pay. In this situation, the owners are propositioning the players and they're saying, you know what? Well, we knew that you were going to take a pay cut because you're playing half the games. But on top of that pay cut, we also want you to take another cut. And we don't know exactly what that looks like because we don't know how much money that we're going to make. But we promise you guys, we're going to split it right down the middle with you. Just trust us. Why shouldn't they trust you?
Well, they don't. They don't trust you. But, I mean, again, you, listen, you're making great points, but you know. I mean, you lived it. I mean, anytime you mention money as a player, it's, you're going to lose that battle. Here's
I'm just tired of people being intellectually lazy and trying to frame the players as the villains in this situation.
Well, you're not going to change
their minds. Just think about it a little bit. It's not like I'm asking you to think about a concept that's outside of the box. It's not something that's foreign to anybody. Everybody knows that if somebody wants you to do something more risky, in order to even consider it, you have to be compensated a little bit more. The owners are asking the players to take more risk and get less pay. That's simple. That's not hard to understand.
No, listen, you're preaching to the choir. I get what you're saying. I mean, as far as the players are concerned, and when you listen to Scott Boras talk, I mean, he's motivated to get the guys on the field and playing because if they don't play, he doesn't get paid. So, I mean, he has his own ulterior motives. But for someone like Blake Snell, for example, right? Like, Blake Snell is supposed to make $7 million this year. So leading into 2020, and he's already won a Cy Young, he's made $6 million. Okay, so you're asking a guy who's only made $6 million, and that's a lot of money. I get it, right? He's made $6 million. So his worth, and that's before taxes and everything, let's just say he's worth in his bank $3 million. So you're asking a guy who's worth, we'll say, upper end, right? $3 million to take a $3.5 million pay cut to start because it's only going to be 82 games. And then on top of that, whatever decision is made as far as revenue sharing is concerned. So he's going to take a haircut. So a guy who's worth $3 million is going to take a $3.5 million pay cut. But you're talking about if baseball is canceled, you're talking about these teams like the Tampa Bay Rays who made $264 million last year to lose $133 million. Or the New York Yankees to take, you know, a loss of $133 million when the Yankees are worth $5 billion. Does that make a lot of sense?
Doesn't make a lot of sense, Rico. It doesn't. It seems like it's completely unfair.
But no one's ever going to take the side of guys complaining about making less than $3 million or $4 million a year.
No,
ever.
No, you're right, Dave. They're not going to take the side because they don't understand why you wouldn't be willing to go to work for that amount of money because they could not fathom being even offered that amount of money. But nobody talks about how much the billionaires are making. Nobody wants to talk about the employers doing everything that they can to protect their bottom line, including firing people and taking away the match program for folks' 401k. Nobody wants to talk about
those
things.
Which is disgusting, by the way.
It is. And I thought Trevor Bauer, I know this is going to sound crazy because I don't side with a lot of things that Trevor Bauer says on his Twitter account, but I thought he did a great job of using an analogy to outline the situation that the players are in. He said, let's say you're a painter. A client who is renovating apartments says he will pay you $100,000 this year for your painting services. You agree and sign a contract. You expect to be paid $100K. The client then experiences a fire and loses half the apartments in the building. This is not your fault, but it's not the client's fault either, so you mutually agree that you'll accept $50K instead of $100K as a show of good faith. A new contract is signed. Then the client realizes they won't be able to rent as many of their apartments as they originally thought. So they propose that instead of paying you $50K, they'll pay you half of their rental income. You have no idea how much their rental income is, and they won't disclose it. The question then becomes, is it your fault as the painter that the client cannot rent his property? You've done the same quality of work and even worked with the client to reflect doing less overall work. Is it fair for the client to now want you, as the painter, to share the burden of not being able to rent the apartments? Are your services worth less because the client cannot rent the apartments?
And on top of that, the client wants you to use lead-based paint to paint
exactly.
the apartments.
Exactly. Again, it's not a concept that's foreign to people. It's not a concept that's foreign to the working class. People understand when you take on a lot more risk in your jobs, you're expecting to be compensated as such, or at least at the same level that you were before. In this situation, the owners not only are saying that they're not going to pay the players more, they're expecting the players to take less than the agreement that they came to a couple of weeks ago.
But it always comes back to the biggest issue right now with, you know, what's going on with the union and the owners in all the sports. Maybe not as much the NBA because that seems more like a partnership than any of the sports is. There is no trust and there is no transparency. In order to agree to a 50-50 split, you have to know the actual number that you're splitting. Like, what are we, what am I getting 50% of? And I don't, I mean, I'm not sure the owners are going to be willing to disclose that because they haven't in the past.
No, I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
Okay, so I mean, how do you feel good about that?
I actually think if they came to the table and said, guys, we will disclose everything, that there's a better chance that the players would say, okay, you know what, at least they're bringing something to the table.
Yeah, at least it's in good faith.
Right? But right at now, least they're trying to handle this thing out of honor, out of doing the right thing.
Yeah, but how would you feel that way? I mean, you, as a player, you're not going to feel that way because you know exactly why the 50-50 revenue split was leaked in the first place. Was to back you in a corner and make you look like the bad guy.
Of course. And then you took the bait.
And then you took the bait, yeah.
Let's go to Tom in Levittown. Tom, you're next up on 98.7.
Yeah, I'm calling about how Chris is saying how the owners want to renegotiate. But in all fairness, the players always do that. They, I mean, and I'm not saying I'm pro-owner here, but this is the one chance the owners get now where they can hold a player over a barrel. The owners can't go to a player and say, well, you only hit 220 last year and you didn't hit 20 home runs. I'm paying you $15 million. I should now pay you $5 million. The owners don't get that luxury. They have to honor the contracts always. The players never have to because they can hold out and demand more money.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. I thought the owners and the players several weeks ago came to an agreement on how they were going to handle the finances for 2020.
And take like any player in any sport. They made it, they signed the contract last year. Or now all of a sudden my stats are much better. I'm not going to show up to training camp the following year.
I mean, most of the time we see that with football players, and they're the only professional athletes in team sports in North America that don't have guaranteed contracts. So I think you're talking about a completely different thing. I don't know that we can assign that to this situation.
Baseball, I mean, baseball players have held out.
I'm not saying that that's not true, but we're talking about the players' union and the owners coming to an agreement about how they're going to handle play in a crisis situation. We're dealing with a pandemic, and players' well-being is being jeopardized. This is an inordinate amount of risk for baseball players in comparison to what they're... Hold on, let me finish talking. Tom, let me finish talking. I'll let you say your piece, but you have to let me finish talking. Okay. The players are taking on an inordinate amount of risk in comparison to what they usually have to deal with. We don't have as much information about the coronavirus, how to deal with it, how to treat it. We don't know the long-term effects of it. And so the players are jeopardizing their health and well-being, not only in the short term, but potentially long term. What are the owners risking in this situation? They're not risking their health. So why do they then have the right to go back on an agreement that they made several weeks ago with the players? Because this is the chance that they got to hold the players over a barrel? So it's fair for the owners to be opportunists in a pandemic situation? How is that right?
Well, just like you said, though, a few weeks ago or months ago when they came to this agreement, nobody expected there'd be empty ballparks. No one expected it to go on this long. So the times have changed. It's just like, again, a guy went from being a 250 hitter to a 300 hitter, and now he's holding out and demanding more money because his level of play has changed. They do the same thing. Again, I'm not pro-owner, and the owner, you're right.
Sounds like you're pro-owner. You're making a lot of excuses for him.
No, the owners aren't taking any risk, but it just comes off a little hypocritical when if the issue is the risk, the players shouldn't want to play at all. They should just be like, you know, it's
long-term effect. Tom, you're being naive if you're saying that there's not a dollar figure associated with the risk that you're about to take. Every person has that. Every person has a certain dollar figure that they associate with the amount of risk that they're going to take. Period. Every person deals with that. Every person is aware of that. So to say that, well, the players, if it's about worrying about your life, they shouldn't decide to play anyway. That's ridiculous. You can't divorce the two ideas, the amount that you're being compensated versus the risk that you're taking on.
You're talking about Rich Cleaver. Like, you think Mike Trout's going to care if he gets extra money? I mean, Mike Trout probably cares more about his health and his family.
Every player,
yeah, but he will.
Mike
but
Trout.
Time out. But time out. Here's the other thing, though. Take into account, and I get it. I mean, it's tough because you know most of the people that consume sports are employees. They don't. I mean, a lot of people don't own businesses, so it's easier to kind of put yourself in the shoes of an employee. And you know, athletes make a ton of money. The problem with what you're saying is, yeah, Mike Trout makes a ton of money and he'll be fine. But Mike Trout's only going to get to play baseball and earn this amount of money for a very short period of time. So all the money he loses now when he retires before the age of 40, like, he'll never see that money again, and he won't make nearly as much money for the rest of his life. So you're still talking about the next, hopefully he's, you know, he has a long life, the next 40 years where he has no income outside of what he made as a professional baseball player.
He's making more in a season than most people in this country will ever make in their
life.
Yeah,
but Mike Trout isn't most people, man. Mike Trout is not most people. Mike Trout gets paid a premium because he's great at what he does, and he generates revenues for his bosses. That's why Mike Trout gets compensated the way that Mike Trout gets compensated. Mike Trout is not like everyone else. There's only so many people that can do what Mike Trout does. You're talking about maybe the greatest, when it's all said and done, one of the greatest baseball players to ever walk the earth. Don't try to compare yourself to Mike Trout and put yourself in the same situation as Mike Trout. Most professional athletes aren't Mike Trout.
You going to play right now if your career was okay, being that you have two small kids?
Yes. Yes, my wife would make me go play, yeah. I would stay in a hotel and I would go play.
And she, you'd stay in the hotel, though. Well, that's part of the problem. These players don't want to do that, though, either, in baseball. Maybe because they have their whole season ahead of them or whatever it's going to be, whereas now in the hockey, you only have 15 games ahead of you.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. But here's the thing, though, right? And I appreciate the phone call and I appreciate your point. But that also goes into not only are we risking our well-being, and you don't have enough answers for us. Yeah, hopefully we're in the age demographic and we're in great shape so we'll get through it. But no one really knows. Or if I get it, and I mean, God forbid one of these older managers, like you're seeing what's happening now with Art Howe. What happens if Joe Maddon gets sick and he, you know, is in intensive care during the season? How does that affect his team and their mindset? And on top of it, you're asking these guys, because when push comes to shove, I know originally they're like, well, we don't want to be away from our families. Listen, my wife would tell me, you're going back to play. You're not going to be around us because I have two young kids in, we don't want to get them sick. So you're going to sacrifice that too. Your health and also being with your family. What is that worth to you? How much money?
But I think I think the point of what you're saying is how much money is enough to justify that risk. It's different for each individual player.
Exactly right.
Can't say that if given the choice that we would do this, so they should do this. That's not how this works. It's up to each player to decide whether or not the money is worth them going out there and taking the risk that they would take during this baseball season. Now, I think Rod Manfred did the right thing in saying that if players don't want to come in and play because they don't feel like it's safe, then we're not going to make them come in and play. I think that's the right approach to have. But what we can't do as the public is say that, these guys, because they don't want to play for the amount of money that the owners are putting on the table, they're being greedy. I just don't understand why the athletes should have the mentality that we should accept whatever proposition the owners put on the table after they thought that they came to an agreement with the owners several weeks ago about how they were going to handle the finances of this situation.
All right, let's do this. Quick break.
Here's the thing, though,
we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from Rob Manfred, more of him next on 98.7 ESPN. In these trying times, important to remember we pulled together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 9870ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. All right, Rick, go ahead. Pick up where you left off.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I understand what Rob Manfred is saying. If you don't want to play because you feel like you're at risk, I mean, that's fine for certain players. I mean, there are some players that can make that decision, but that you can't, that's not a blanket statement. It's all dependent on your situation. I mean, Laura Rutledge is married to a former Major League Baseball player, and she was asked the question this morning on Get Up, what would you guys do? Would he come back? And she said, well, I have an infant child.
Right.
And I would want him to go back because of his situation, he's kind of a back end of the roster guy, and we wouldn't want him to lose his job. So I'd send him back. He'd go back. We'd have that conversation, and then he'd have to stay away from his family because right. He wouldn't want to put us at risk.
There's a ton of decisions because Mike Trout can do whatever he wants. If Mike Trout feels uncomfortable, he cannot play. And the second that it's a better situation or there's a vaccine or whatever, Mike Trout's going to be welcomed back with open arms. But if you are the 53rd guy on an NFL roster or the 24th guy on a Major League Baseball roster, there's probably more pressure for you.
Yeah, I mean,
financially.
Listen. If you're Gio Urshela, can you risk not coming back?
No.
Well, no, by the time you come back, your job will be gone.
Rick, you know this and I know this. There are more players that can't afford to sit out than there are guys that can afford to be on the sidelines while this is going on in 2020. Like, if they decide that they come to some agreement and they're going to play baseball games, and there's somebody that decides that they don't want to come back and play, most likely it's going to be somebody that has a lot of financial security. And let's face it, most guys, you're talking about them being year to year. Most guys can't afford to miss an entire season of earnings because, again, you're talking about a finite period of time that you have as a professional athlete, as the small period of time you have in your life to be able to capitalize on your athletic ability, and you're not going to just give up one of those seasons.
But that's what it comes down to for me, right? When you're in this situation trying to make this decision. Now, personally, you know, having talked to Cassie quite a bit about this, I would make the decision to be away from my family and I would go back, right? But you say Mike Trout, and Mike Trout makes a ton of money, and he deserves all the money he's getting paid because he's that good. But there is a finite window for him to make this amount of money. So Mike Trout will have 12 years to make his contract, which is $430 million, right? $430 million, astronomical number, right? But it's for the next 12 years, and then he'll be done. He doesn't have to work, but he doesn't have to get a job, but he won't be making that money. The Angels in 2019 made $377 million in 1 year. So Trout takes him 12 years to make 430. It took the Angels 1 year to make 377. And that's Mike Trout. I get it. I mean, it's an astronomical number. But these owners can own these teams for as long as they choose to own these teams. A player will be told when he's done. There's a cutoff date for a player to play as long as he can play if someone wants to pay him, and then it's over. Then it's done.
Yeah, that's it.
And unfortunately for athletes, you're not an appreciating asset. The older you get, the less you're worth. As opposed to these franchises, the more time goes on, the bigger the money gets, the more they're worth.
But here's the thing. I think it's hard for people ordinarily to understand this. When the world is perfect and clicking on all cylinders, it's hard to understand that this guy has a finite amount of time to make 10, 20, 50, 100, 200, $400 million in Mike Trout's case right now. It's harder now when the normal person is struggling the way that they're struggling. So they're going to be less accepting of the athlete saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to come back and play for less than what I'm scheduled to make this year.
Well, they're never going to accept it. And I think what muddies the waters is now because, you know, Blake Snell said what he said, that, you know, I'm not coming back unless I get mine, unless I get, you know, whatever was agreed to. So now, because he said that, he's put a price tag on, you know, what his health is worth. So now it's no longer just about his health. It's about the money associated with his health. Which everyone, in my opinion, I think, and, you know, Chris, you kind of insinuated it. I mean, everyone does have a price, don't they?
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Look, whether it's right or wrong, everybody has that price. If you said to me, Dave, you got to, you know, deliver a pizza to the hospital for $100, I'd laugh at you. If you told me I'm going to give you $1 million to hazmat up and go to the hospital right now and deliver a pizza, you know what? I'd go do it.
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about aren't concepts that are lost on people. That's the part that's so frustrating for me, because when you try to outline it and you explain where the players are coming from, everybody still wants to side with ownership. And it's clear that ownership is using the pandemic to squeeze the players for all they can, not only now, but to also set the stage for the impending CBA negotiations in 2021. Like, being able to have a 50-50 revenue split, like Tony Clark said, is imposing somewhat of a salary cap. And baseball is the last remaining sport where you don't have an actual salary cap. So if you're the players and you've earned that right, if you stood together in solidarity as a union and you've gotten the opportunity to not have a salary cap, why all of a sudden would you accept a salary cap of sorts amidst a pandemic type of situation? You just wouldn't do it.
I mean, you just had the Mets. I mean, this is recent. I mean, the Mets were going to be sold for $2.6 billion, and that was without SNY.
Rick, right. Jeff Loria bought the Miami Marlins in 2002 for $158 million.
Oh, my God.
He sold them a couple of years ago for $1.2 billion.
And he got a new stadium built there, too.
A new stadium, which was built in part with public money.
Yeah, completely bilked Miami. That was awful.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.